Chapter 12. After Craig left on Sunday morning, Lorene went out to the payphone at the gas station and called Warren in New York. She told him that Chris had been dealing a large quantity of pot out of the house. It had been the one thing that Chris and Warren had always been in agreement on. The only dope in the house should be what was used for personal consumption. Warren was clearly angry. Who did he sell it to? Nat Rossi. How much of it was there? A lot. Pounds, I think. Craig knew what was going on. I mean, he walked in and the house was reeking of pot. There was Ron sitting in the living room smoking away. Wasn't Chris there? He came in later on with this huge bag, and then he and Nat disappeared into his room, being about as obvious as possible about why he was there. Craig was getting nervous about it, so we left. Not everyone is as comfortable about drug deals as Chris is. It's gonna have to stop. I'll take care of it. Did you say anything to Chris about it? Okay. I mean, it's his house, you know? Maybe I should just move out. I'm beginning to see clearly now that Rahway is going to have to be changed. Either Chris has to stop or he has to go. And there may have been more than too many people smoking dope around the place day and night. It's putting everything that we have in jeopardy. Are you going to be around for dinner tonight? I don't know. Are you going to be there? Art and I are coming out this afternoon. I'm going to visit my folks, but I'll make sure that I come home in time for dinner, said Lorene. Chris tried to reach Peter twice more on Sunday. Both times, Peter's brother asked when Chris was going to be coming out there with the rest of the money. Chris said he would have everything collected and was planning on coming out there in no more than a week. Peter's brother said that Peter probably wouldn't be back from Mexico until then, but that everybody knew that Chris was coming out and he should just call back with an arrival time so there would be somebody around to meet him at the airport. When Chris got back to the house, he saw that Warren and Art had arrived. He found the two of them sitting in the living room with Ron. Chris shook Art's hand and asked how things were going. Art smiled and nodded his head. He stroked his beard and said, "Everything's fine, Chris. How are things going for you?" "Everything's moving right along," said Chris. Warren cackled and said, "Yes, I hear that a lot of stuff has been moving." Chris gave Ron an inquiring look, and Ron shrugged as if he didn't know what Warren was talking about. Chris said, "I've got to go out for a while. I'll just be back later." "You just came in," said Warren. "I was only down at the corner talking to California." "And how's California?" asked Warren. "Good. I'm going out there next Sunday." Chris went back into his room, got his briefcase, and left. Art turned to Ron and said, "Tell me about your dreams." "They're vivid and bright and make me feel like I'm always taking a bath in warm, clear water. She's always in them, and she's always saying something like, 'It's going to be okay, and we'll be together again, and we're both all right.' We're always touching. Either we're walking or on a beach or laying in bed. She's always comforting me, and I always feel her still inside of me when I wake up." "She's certainly inside of you. The question is how to get her out." "It's the time when I feel the absolute best of any point in my day." "That's another reason why it's no good. Do you want to live your life with the high point of the day being when you're asleep?" "I can't make the dream stop." "The dreams will change if you look at her more honestly." "What does that mean?" "Come on, Ron. Don't play games. You know exactly what I mean by now." "I don't think I do," Warren said. "He means that some of this is acting, that you're enjoying some of the attention and leeway that people are giving you." "That's what you think?" Ron paused, looked squarely into Warren Lashley's face. "Warren, I really didn't ask for your help. You offered it, and I appreciate it, but I don't feel like swallowing shit in order to get it." "We're trying to help you to stop swallowing shit, Ron," said Hart. "I know that. I need to straighten some things out about myself before I'll really have control again. That's clear to me. What I'm having a hard time with is the notion that I'm possessed and that Robin is some kind of witch or something evil."
"Look at the shape of you," said Warren.
"I know, but how do we come to the conclusion that she's responsible for that? And how do we get around to the notion that this person that I've been living with for the last 3 years all of a sudden has become so powerful?"
"Her power is relative to your weakness," said Hart.
"You're the one who needs to get stronger. The dreams are an example of your need to rely on her in order to be all right. Like you said, she's the one that is always saying that things are going to work out when you're both better, or when you're ready for her. But she's the one who's always making the determination. So you're saying that I'm giving her the power to be like this by being weak?"
"In effect, yes.
So you don't really think that there's anything strange about her?"
"I've never met her," said Art.
"There's no way for me to tell you what she's like. All I have to judge her on is what you told me and what you do."
Ron shook his head in agreement.
"Warren, what about you? You know Robin. What do you think?"
"I think you were lucky to get back here alive. I told you that. I think that you're far from out of the woods yet. I think that the major problem is that you've decided that your life is dependent on what she decides to do. That's too much power to give anybody."
"What I want to do is get her back. How do you think I should go about trying to accomplish that?"
"I don't think that you can," said Warren. "I think that you're no match for her right now."
Ron put his head down and closed his eyes.
"Well, I've got till Wednesday to get stronger, because I think if I lose hold of her now, it's over."
"Ron," said Art, "Warren's point is a good one, and you shouldn't lose sight of it. One of the things that has made you this weak is your feeling that your life isn't your own anymore."
"I know what you mean," said Ron.
Chris didn't come back for dinner, and Warren seemed agitated about it. Lorene, Ruth, Art, Warren, and Ron sat down to eat about 10:30. Warren watched to see what Ron would put on his plate. He skipped the steak and took portions of salad, vegetables, French fries, and wine.
"You need to eat meat," said Warren with exasperation. He forked a slice of London broil and dropped it on Ron's plate.
"Warren, I told you, it makes me sick, and that I don't eat it anymore."
"Meat couldn't make you sick after not eating it for 2 months. Try some."
Ron stared down at the slice of meat. His mind flashed on the hard things his imagination had produced when he was going past the stockyards in Chicago. Living things being brought to a place where their throats were slit. He decided that he wasn't going to be part of it anymore.
Lorene was asking Art about the role intuition played in the analysis of dreams. Art was saying that intuition could be trained like any other voluntary part of the mind.
"You think intuition is voluntary?" she said.
"Yes, it can be directed. It can be denied. It can be enhanced."
Warren said that he didn't necessarily agree with that. He said that intuition was a gift of the gods and that it should be treated as such.
Art countered that it was impossible to say what gifts the gods had given to us and how they were intended to be used.
Lorene said that she thought that it was a gift that was best used by women, and that told her that it had to do with how well developed a person's interior life was.
Ruth said that she thought people either had it or they didn't. Ron stared at his meat. Finally, Warren asked him what he thought about intuition. I don't feel like I have any right now, but at the same time, I think that I'm living almost completely inside of myself. I think that I used to have it, but I think that I didn't know very much about where it came from and when to trust it. I think that your lack of trust pretty much illustrates the lack of an interior life, said Lorene. Warren said that Ron was too confused right now to be an example of anything except confusion. Just as he was finishing the sentence, Chris came in the back door with two girls. One of the girls, named Jade, who Ron hadn't seen for a couple of years, and the other he recognized as her friend Carol. They were laughing and talking to each other as they walked into the kitchen. Chris was talking a little too loudly, the way he did when he was drunk. I thought you were going to be here for dinner, said Warren. I guess I kind of forgot about it, said Chris. That put an end to the conversation about intuition. The eight of them huddled around the oval-shaped oak table. Warren introduced Jade and Carol to Art, who seemed more interested in Jade's smooth, thin face and body. Jade picked up on Art's interest, blinking her eyes slowly, and turned to him. What do you do? She said. I'm an analyst, said Art. Has Warren made you the official Rahway analyst, or are you just here as someone's friend? Jade stared at Lorene and smiled when she asked the last part of the question. Art's my friend, said Warren. There's a switch, Jade was slurring her words ever so slightly. I didn't know that Warren had any friends that he didn't fuck. Take it easy, said Warren. Oh, I'm teasing you, Warren. Isn't Rahway famous for the place where you can talk about anything? Carol laughed, and Ruth said that she thought she would like to go to bed. Warren said he was going to stay up for a while. Jade called after Ruth. Don't be like that. Everybody here has probably fucked everybody else at some time or another, haven't they? I mean, at least the men and women have, right, Chris? You're a little out of control, giggled Chris, after Ruth had left the table and Warren had excused himself, saying that he'd be right back. Why don't we go into my room and smoke a joint? Anyone else who wants to come is welcome, said Chris, bobbing his head in Ron's direction. I want to come, said Carol, laughing. We all know how much you like to come, Carol, said Jade. Chris got up from the table and the two girls followed him. Ron stayed there with Art and Lorene. Is he ever going to change? Is anything ever going to be more than a good time to him? I don't know, said Ron. I love him. You know that. But he's headed for trouble, Ron. Can't you see what he's doing? I think Chris usually knows exactly what he's doing. Then you're blind, too. Chris walked back into the kitchen and said to Ron, Aren't you going to come back in and smoke a joint? Sure, said Ron. Then Chris said, Would you like to get high, Art? Art smiled and said that he was fine. What about Lorene? Sometimes you're such a fool, Chris. Sour grape, said Chris, smiling and snapping his fingers. He turned on his heel. Ron stayed in the room while they smoked a joint. Then he said he was tired and was going to bed. Why don't you just stay here, said Carol. I don't think that I'm up to it, said Ron. Are you still with Robin, said Jade? Sort of. And you've decided to be a good boy now, Jade said, staring between his legs. I guess. Where is she, said Carol, stroking the inside of his thigh. In Minnesota. Visiting? She continued to stroke. No, she lives there. And you're still faithful to her, said Carol. That's romantic. But you know, she probably wouldn't mind you having a little bit of fun. Ron's too serious for fun, said Jade. Chris laughed and said, I wouldn't bet on that. Ron was confused. About 6 years ago, he'd panted after Jade and she told him that he wasn't ready for her. He'd spent a night with her and Carol while Robin was visiting Minnesota a couple of years ago, and he had been so guilty that he told Robin about it. They were a pair, and he hadn't slept with anyone in months. But there was a voice inside of him that was saying that this wasn't the right thing to do. The person that he wanted to make love to was Robin, and neither of these girls could ever be Robin. Ron grabbed a joint from Chris's tray and said, "You guys have fun." "This house just isn't as much fun as it used to be," said Jade. Chris giggled and said, "Wanna bet?" Ron closed the door in back of him. The kitchen was empty. Ron could hear the muffled sounds of Loreen and Art talking in her bedroom. He went into his room, took off his clothes, and lit a joint. He picked up his notebook and began scribbling some lines to another song that he'd started about Rahway this time. He wrote the title across the top of the page, "Snake Garden Paradise." He puffed on the joint and began to write. The song came out easily, and he liked playing with rhymes. Then he turned back to the pad and poetry that he was writing and began sliding the side of his hand across it. The conversations with Art and Warren came back to him. When they were here, Rahway felt like their playroom with the emotionally traumatized. The doctor nods as if he hadn't heard at all. "But that wasn't exactly the dream you had. I went to a theater that was all closed in, with half-filled rows of chairs. The work lights came on, and she started to move. The curtains stayed closed, and the audience took part, wearing masks that smiled or frowned. She humped and rolled, saying her intentions were good. I got up to run, but I never did move." After Warren finished with Ruth, he came back out into the kitchen. He smiled when he heard the noises coming out of Lorene's room. He frowned when he smelled the pot coming from the room Ron was in. He sat down at the table, filled his pipe, put his head against the wall, and listened.